Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. I want to give a special shout-out to Deidre for covering last week. Deidre, thank you so much. I know it was a beautiful, beautiful call, so thank you from the bottom of my heart. I will share at some point about the retreat because I had a little Course in Miracles insight experience come forward while I was there. But that will come. I feel moved to start, as we usually do, with just dropping into a few moments of silence together. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives. And we place the Holy Spirit in charge by our request. And with the love in your heart and the light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. And you know, I do feel a little moved before we start reading, and I will read the page numbers. I'll just share a little bit about the retreat, and then I'm sure I'll share more as the call goes on, but it was a 5-day silent mindfulness meditation retreat up at the Insight Meditation Society up in Massachusetts. And it was pretty interesting because going into it, my schedule was really intense. I had a lot on my plate, and I was feeling a quite intense level of stress with the amount of work that I had to get done before leaving on the retreat. So getting there and going into silence with no distractions from your own mind after it's been going and going and going and racing, my mind, this is actually really relevant to what we're reading tonight because we're still talking about, you know, now being the closest that we have to eternity in this world. And I saw so clearly how my mind wanted to be anywhere other than in the present moment. It wanted to be anywhere other than in my body, with the breath, in the present. It just wanted to go. And so for the first 2 days, it really took me a while to settle in and sort of find my groove with the practice, because the days are all focused on practicing mindfulness meditation in some form. So you're either sitting while practicing mindfulness, you're walking, practicing mindfulness, or eating in silence together as well. And, you know, the whole time there's no talking, there's no eye contact, because that's looked at as a form of breaking the silence. And they also encourage you to not read or write, because that's also looked at as a form of breaking the silence as well. It's an opportunity that, you know, this sort of container is trying to provide for us to really stay present to your present moment experience and to see how much the mind just is all over the place. And so it was quite difficult at times because of the urges to want to, you know, get up or move or just like let the mind just go. And one of the things that I'll share that the teacher said, this is actually my second to last day that I was there. We had been talking about just wrapping things up and transitioning back into going home, and sitting there in the meditation hall, I just felt my mind go back into that, like, all right, the anticipation, what comes next, got to pack, you know, my bags, got to pack the car, want to get out as soon as possible. And the retreat wasn't even over yet. So it's just so interesting to see how the mind is typically anticipating, planning, you know, for me in the future often. And the teacher at that point, when we began to practice again, she used a phrase that I feel like is really going to stick with me. She said that it's really important to develop an attitude of relaxed allowing. In other words, when you feel that agitation or that anxiety or whatever that feeling is, it's an attitude of like, okay, this is what my present experience is, and it's okay. And in course terms, then, you know, saying, and I'm willing to look at this with the Holy Spirit, or I'm willing to bring this to the Holy Spirit. So that phrase, developing that attitude of relaxed allowing, was so helpful for me because it helped me sort of take that moment and be like, oh, I'm just in, this is what anticipation feels like. This is what planning feels like. And I can let it be what it is without, you know, sort of needing to go with it. And with that, it was helpful for me to get back into the present. So there are a lot of moments like that of just noticing how the mind just is not in the present and bringing it back over and over. So it really is a beautiful opportunity. The course's quote, how you're much too tolerant of mind wandering, has a whole new meaning for me now because I've done these retreats before, but the first one was a good 6 years ago. So it's been a while. So this, you know, in a sense, it felt like I was doing it for the first time again. So that's what I'll share for now, unless anybody has any questions, and I have something else that I'll add later on.
Did you feel any anxiety?
You know, there were a couple moments, actually more than a couple, to be honest. It wasn't actual anxiety. It was more of fear of having anxiety. So it was like once removed, but there were moments when, particularly in the first 2 days when I was still in that like go, go, go mode, where I was like, okay, wait a second, you know, am I going to get it? Like, I'm not exactly sure. And what I learned in those moments was that it was really helpful. And they would say, because again, it's a Buddhist place, they would say this is skillful, that when you are recognizing that, like, you know, perhaps that the anxiety could grow, turning your awareness or your attention to do something else. So there were times when I basically gave myself permission that if doing the sitting practice with everybody wasn't going to be helpful for me, if it was going to be like way too excruciating, I went for a mindful walk instead, or I sat in another room where I could, you know, maybe not sit the full 45 minutes. So those initial 2 days, I did a lot of that sort of easing myself into it. So I never actually had anxiety. Like I said, it was more of the fear of getting it. But even just the ability to see that with the Holy Spirit, that there's this like chatty, planny voice in my head that's like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? Like, are you going to get it? Just, again, there's no distractions from that. It's like you and that crazy voice in your head, and you're just able to look at it with the Holy Spirit. So no, to answer your question, I did not have anxiety, but I had a fear of having it that came up that I worked with. So
now, was there some preparation before all of this?
Yes. There's like an orientation in the beginning when you get there. They serve dinner the night that everybody's checking in. Then after that, you have your first sort of, you know, sit-down meditation with the teachers, and they sort of, you know, orient you as to how it's going to go and give you some instruction. And that's usually like it was probably about a 45-minute session, 45 minutes to an hour or so. And there are two breakout groups where you have an opportunity to get into small groups and meet with the teachers and ask questions or share, you know, anything that's going on. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's helpful. And in the twice a day when they're guiding the meditations, because a lot of the periods are just total silence in terms of the meditation periods. It's not like a guided meditation. Twice a day when the teachers are guiding the meditation, they also usually open it up for questions at the end. So a few people get a chance to ask questions in the big meditation hall. So I'm not sure if I've sold this type of thing by talking about it. I don't know if I'm making it sound very glamorous, but it was really worth it for me. And I actually think that I'm going to be registering for a 9-day retreat over the summer. So, yeah, I know, I'm a little nervous, but that's how helpful it was.
I know, Corinne, I have done something with a woman that practices with Thich Nhat Hanh, mindfulness, and it's been a day retreat. Mm. And I can just say that, you know, it is a little different because we do make eye contact. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of differences, mm-hmm. but it is a silent day. Mm-hmm. And whenever I've walked away from that, I feel so refreshed.
It's
hard to put into words, and that's only one day. It's not even 24 hours.
Right.
So I
Judy
can
Weaver.
Imagine, yes, exactly, Judy Weaver.
Yeah.
But
we would do the, I think it was Monday nights at Unity Church, I think for 2 hours or so.
Right.
She would do the mindful. And there were times, even for a couple of hours, where it would be, oof.
And
know,
what is this, but, you know, like, and that's awesome, Carol, that, you know, you noticed feeling refreshed. What is that? But, you know, that ability to slow down and calm down and to get into the present is where the Holy Spirit is. So to bring this all back to the Course, as it's going to say in about, I think, the second paragraph that we'll read tonight, that now is the closest approximation of eternity which this world offers. So to have that gift of being able to, you know, get the distractions away from you and really just practice getting into the present, even if it's for a couple of hours or even if you only have 10 minutes in a day, it's really, really nourishing. It's really, really nourishing.
Well, the other thing, I mean, you're much more into technology, Facebook, Twitter, all that, than I am. I mean, I would think to be removed even from that has to be huge.
Yes, and I can speak to that too, and I'm glad that you brought that up because that flew through my head and then I quickly forgot about it. I actually, the first time I logged on to the computer and went on Facebook, I got a little teary and crying because I didn't want to go on it ever again. I didn't want to ever check my email again because it was so nice. It was so fulfilling to not do that. And what my husband said immediately, and he was spot on, it's not the computer or Facebook or email that's the problem. It's my relationship to it. So if I'm going to be getting lost in it and, you know, obsessively checking it or, you know, out of boredom just going on it, that's my relationship with it. It in and of itself is nothing. Mm-hmm. It's like everything else in this world. It's completely neutral. It's my relationship that I make to it. So having the break from technology was, I can't even tell you how, that was just, it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal.
But, I mean, so many people, our priest actually, he's in his 70s, and, you know, he will talk about seeing people in restaurants, families in restaurants, with their devices in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's not just you. I mean, this is the world.
Yes, this is the world we live in.
This is the connection that people have made in the world is to, as you say, have a relationship with these devices.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than spirit to spirit.
Right.
Well, that's huge. I mean, because maybe 20 years a silent retreat would be very different than it is to people today, releasing that kind of, you know, releasing technology from their lives.
Right.
Well, it's also a form of dependence, too.
Dependence, distraction.
That's very unsettling.
Oh, good. Well, let's stick with this theme of the present moment, and let's dive into our reading. So we are in the Sparkle Edition. Again, we're on page 289. We're picking up where we left off from 2 weeks ago. So again, Sparkle Edition, page 289, right in the center of the page, would you recognize a holy encounter? It's the third paragraph, actually the second full paragraph. Would you recognize a holy encounter? Again, page 289 in the Sparkle. In the original edition, it is chapter 12, part 4, paragraph 29. Again, that's page 243 in the original edition. Would you recognize a holy encounter? And last but not least, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, we're on page 246, paragraph 6, sentence number 7. It starts mid-paragraph. If you're following along in the FIP edition, you'll probably notice that the paragraph breaks are different. So again, it starts with, would you recognize a holy encounter? Okay, here we go. Would you recognize a holy encounter if you are merely perceiving it as a meeting with your own past? For you are meeting no one, and the sharing of salvation, which makes the encounter holy, is excluded from your sight. The Holy Spirit teaches that you always meet yourself, and the encounter is holy because you are. The ego teaches that you always encounter your past, and because your dreams were not holy, the future cannot be, and the present is without meaning. It is evident that the Holy Spirit's perception of time is the exact opposite of the ego's. The reason is equally clear, for they perceive the goal of time as diametrically opposed. So I'll pause there. So we're not going to see those holy encounters if we have that baggage in our mind, if we're seeing only the past. We're not going to see our brothers as they actually are if we're looking through, you know, the ego lens, which is the body's eyes. It's only when we're looking to the Holy Spirit in the present that the Holy Spirit uses the Holy Spirit's vision to then show us the holiness in our brother because it's in ourselves.
Doesn't it also say somewhere in here, and I think this is very, very powerful, that when you meet your brother, it's like meeting him for the first time.
Mm. Yeah, it does say that somewhere. I can't think of
it. I'm pretty sure it's because that, when we remember to do that,
mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dropping all that past stuff.
With no past. No past.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. Ah. Let's read the next paragraph. The Holy Spirit interprets time's purpose as rendering the need for it unnecessary. Thus does he regard the function of time as temporary, serving only his teaching function, which is temporary by definition. His emphasis is therefore on the only aspect of time which can extend to the infinite, for now is the closest approximation of eternity which this world offers. It is in the reality of now, without past or future, that the beginning of the appreciation of eternity lies. For only now is here, and it presents the opportunities for the holy encounters in which salvation can be found. I love that. Now is the closest approximation of eternity which this world offers. And just to clarify, too, in the beginning where it says, Holy Spirit interprets time's purpose as rendering the need for it unnecessary. So ultimately, you know, we're in time. We believe we're in time right now, but ultimately, you know, the goal of the Course is not to make a happy world. It's to lead us out of what we think the world is. It's to lead us home. And then it goes on, thus does he regard the function of time as temporary, serving only his teaching function, which is temporary by definition. In other words, I'm not going to think of the exact quote of the Course, but when we questioned, when we went down, you know, had that tiny mad idea of wanting this special separate state and had some sort of, I don't remember what the question was that the Course references, it says that God immediately gave the answer, and the answer is the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit has a temporary teaching function by definition because we're already home, number one. We just haven't realized it yet. And this seeming illusion that we're in, it's not going to go on forever when we're ready to lay it down. You know, it'll at some point, again, it already is done, but we still perceive it as ongoing. The Holy Spirit won't need the Holy Spirit anymore because we'll be using that Christ vision fully when we know our true nature, our true selves. I hope that was clear. Any questions or comments so far? Anything coming up for anyone?
I had a lot come up for me during that last paragraph, actually during the whole call, but the last paragraph I started thinking, I'm not sure if I had even shared here, but My living situation had to change a couple months ago after my dad passed, so I had to move back home. And there's definitely been times where, you know, my ego will go into what I've lost, which is the past, or how are you going to get out of it? Like, what are you, you know, how are you going to change this? And it goes into future, you know, projection mode. And when I've been able to find peace is when I let both of those things go and kind of question, okay, am I thinking in the future, the past, or am I present? And when I get present is when I find the most peace. And then when we were reading the paragraph and it talked about that being eternity, like that's, you know, that's reality in that moment, I was like, yeah, that's that feeling of freedom and real peace. So that was a big confirmation and aha for me.
Awesome. I love how you put that, how you even said the word freedom. It is freedom. It is total freedom. And I can so resonate with what you're saying with just those, you know, whatever the circumstance is, when we get so caught up in like, what's going to happen? What am I going to do? How's it going to be? And that moment of just pausing and entering into, you know, the now, that this holy instant, and that's where the miracles happen. That's when things shift, and it's so restful. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And that's
totally.
Trust. That's really trust. That's where trust sits, you know.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. You're right. Trust sits in the present. Awesome. Anybody else have anything to add? Okay, let's keep reading. The ego, on the other hand, regards the function of time as one of extending itself in place of eternity. For, like the Holy Spirit, the ego interprets the goal of time as its own. The continuity of past and future under its direction is the only purpose the ego perceives in time, and it closes over the present so that no gap in its own continuity can occur. Its continuity, then, would keep you in time, while the Holy Spirit would release you from it. It is his interpretation of the means of salvation, which you must learn to accept if you would share his goal of salvation for you. Okay, this is another big paragraph. So here it's saying that the goal of the ego is the ego uses time as a means of extending itself, and it does so by continuing the past into the future, thus closing off the present so that there's no gap where the present can abide, because it's always projecting in the past, in the future. I want to share the experience that I had on the retreat that relates to this, because this retreat was different for me. A lot of mindfulness meditations are sort of in developing your ability to be mindful, a lot of concentration practices are used. So you might focus on your body or your breath. You direct your awareness to one specific thing. This retreat was more about observing the mind, just literally just observing it. Just sit and let awareness be aware of what the mind is doing. And like I've already said, I noticed so much chatter. I noticed that I have a constant song playing in the back of my awareness. Like, I can be present reading or doing something, but there's still some typically really annoying song or commercial or something just sort of repeating itself in the back of my head. And the question came to me, why is the mind so busy? Why is it constantly, why is it constant chatter in the mind? And immediately there was an answer that was just laid down next to me. It wasn't like my intellect sort of thinking this question through. It was just boom, right there. And the answer that came to me, and I believe it was from the Holy Spirit, is that the mind is so busy because, as we know from the Course, God extends. Love extends. That is what we are. We are that. We are those extensions of God, and we continue that extension of love outward throughout all of of creation. In this form state, in this, you know, illusory state that we're in, we've arrested that extension. We've stopped it in order to experience ourselves as separate. And so in building these blocks, in halting this love, this energy that we are that wants to just keep extending that love outward, we've built these blocks that have halted that extension. And so now it's like ping-ponging energy off the walls, like on the inside of your head. That's what came to me, that's why the mind is so busy, because we're not extending we've halted, and again, we haven't really done so, but we think that we have halted that extension of love outward to experience this separate state. So I just wanted to share that, because that I feel like relates to what this just said about, you know, how the ego closes over the present so that there's no gap and that the continuity between past and future can occur. If the mind is constantly chatter, 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 that's not in the present, because it's preoccupied elsewhere. So it was just sort of, I'm just connecting this now to the reading, but that was the experience that I had on the retreat.
So then, in practical terms then, right,
uh-huh.
We're agreeing or confirming that the ego basically is the great distractor. Right?
Yes.
It makes you focus on the past and beats you up about the past,
uh-huh.
and it makes you focus on the future, and uh-huh. it scares the living daylights out of you with the future.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
All right? So now yeah. Deidre would call it the Tasmanian devil or the past, okay? So we have to tame the ego, right? We can't get rid of it, right? Is that true? We cannot get rid of it.
Well, the Course says that in this, you know, in this world, the ego always speaks first and loudest. So I don't know, is it possible to totally overcome the ego here? I mean, Jesus did it. I think it's possible, but we can't, this is where, so there's sort of a fork in the road for me. I believe, you know, that all paths are helpful. The Course does say that you don't need long periods of meditation to get anywhere. The healing can be instant. The undoing of the ego can be instant through the miracle. So that's what the Course is teaching us how to do, is to, again, take everything that's coming up, turn it to, give it to the Holy Spirit in exchange for that shift in perception, because that we undo the ego, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, as we're ready to let it go. So, I'm sorry.
Well, only that many other psychological principles, and we've mentioned a few of them, that the way is not around, it's through, right?
Right.
You can't get rid of those parts of your personality that are just so annoying, right?
Uh-huh.
So you tame them, or you love them. You get them in
uh-huh,
the sit,
uh-huh.
you know, sit in the back seat kind of thing.
So yeah.
And to me, that's such a it's such a big thing. Like, you can't, the goal, yes, I would agree, absolutely, if we could only get rid of it.
If we try to get rid of it, then who's trying? You know, the ego is nothing to the Holy Spirit. It doesn't have to get rid of anything. And so it's, rather than something that we get rid of, it's something that will fall away. We're ready to let it go.
There you go.
Last week, I don't know the woman's name who was on the call. She's been on the call a lot lately. She made a very interesting comment. And do you remember this? She said there really is no ego, and the Course talks about that the ego really does not exist. That all of this, there's the two voices in your head, and we've actually taught ourselves all of this negativity that you know, takes us down.
Right.
We've learned it. We teach it to one another.
And we teach
that
it
to me was so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
That, because sometimes, you know, and even in reading this paragraph, it almost seems like the ego exists. But it really doesn't exist at all. It's
right.
just garbage that we've picked up along the way.
Exactly.
So really, how hard is it when you look at it that way?
It's actually not hard at all.
To say, hey, wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to think this. This is just crap I learned. Think about a baby coming into this world. I mean, babies lie there and look at one another.
Mm-hmm.
They're black, white, yellow, all these colors, all of these. And they don't know any. They have no language. They haven't learned any of it. They're just love. They're just. So we've just learned a lot of mistaken thinking, you know.
We have. And, you know, another just one thing that comes up with that example of babies just to keep in mind, too, is that baby is also making the choice to enter into this dream of separation. So it's not coming in with a blank slate and just being taught all the negativity from outside. Just by that decision to come here, it's chosen to experience this state of separation.
Corinne, that is incredible.
That's the course.
I can't wrap my head around that, really.
It's okay, and you don't have to.
No. Yeah, so before we even entered this body, we made a conscious
mm-hmm.
decision
mm-hmm.
to to go play.
Yep.
To go play in the fast lane.
Yep.
Holy shit. Well, am I going to do it again? Probably.
Who knows, you know? And if we do, there's no harm in that because it's again, it's all for our learning. It's all for our returning our awareness back to knowing what we really are. So,
you know, and that's really why technology is fine, playing on the internet, doing, but it's how much pain do you want? It's
yeah.
what it comes
yeah.
down to. You know, I live alone and I'm quiet a lot. And sometimes I just get tired of being quiet. So I'm off for the week. So when I got up this morning, I thought, you know, the hell with it. I'm putting on Channel 4. I want to see what's going on in the world. I had that on for about 15 minutes. And I'm telling you, I turned that off so fast because I started to feel so edgy and unnatural. And, you know, I just, why would I do that?
Yeah.
And I proceeded to have a great day by just doing what I really like to do.
Yeah. I'll just add, and I think I've shared this before because John Mark Stroud was the one who pointed this out, and it's just always stuck with me. Oftentimes this quote gets cited from A Course in Miracles. It says, into eternity where all is one, there crept a tiny, mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh.
Yeah.
That phrase about, you know, the Son of God not laughing often gets cited, but we have to see that word, the Son of God remembered not to laugh.
Yeah.
If you're remembering not to laugh, that's a conscious choice.
Yeah.
So that's that decision to come here that we all, you know, that we all made, and there's no guilt, no guilt whatsoever, you know, with that decision. It's, any guilt is just feeding the ego, but yeah, so I just wanted to share that.
And at least we know that no matter how many times we decide to come ride the roller coaster, we're always in perfect peace and oneness.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're safe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
This percentage Disneyland.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know.
Did you have something to share?
Yeah, I was just going to share. I don't know if anybody else listens to Marianne Williamson's live streams, but she had a free one over Christmas. And her Christmas talk was particularly lovely. And what made me think of it, Corinne, was the story that you just shared about the baby.
Uh-huh.
And there was a point in her talk where she really emphasized this like two or three times. She said, the God who chose Jesus also chose you.
the God who chose Jesus also chose you. So it's really emphasizing again that there's no separation between, you know, love of any kind. We the ego mind likes to think, well, oh, we can't be like Jesus, you know, like Jesus had it all figured out. Jesus had it all done, you know, but the point that she's making is that it's you that chooses the Christ mind or not.
Right.
And it's you that's forgotten that, you know, you've been chosen by God simply because you exist. That's all, you know, it's like
that's
that.
Awesome.
Line in the Course that says your worth is decided by God or something to that effect. And
yeah, I love that line.
Anyways, it was a really awesome live stream.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah, that's really helpful. I, you know, when you said, you know, that we think like, oh, I can't be like Jesus. What is that? And it alludes something to that effect somewhere in the book. That's just another form of specialness. To think that,
yeah.
that you're nowhere near, you know, Jesus, like that's just another form of saying, oh, I'm too special to be like Jesus. Like I'm too bad. I'm too awful. I'm too, you know, whatever it may be. But it's just another form
yeah.
of specialness.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay, let's read the next paragraph. You, too, will interpret the function of time as you interpret yours. If you accept your function in the world of time as healing, you will emphasize only the aspect of time in which healing can occur. For healing cannot be accomplished in the past and must be accomplished in the present to release the future. This interpretation ties the future to the present and extends the present rather than the past. But if you interpret your function as destruction, you will lose sight of the present and hold on to the past to ensure a destructive future. And time will be as you interpret it, for of itself it is nothing. So time is nothing, and depending on which teacher we choose to listen to, which voice we choose to listen to, either the ego or the Holy Spirit, it will either be, you know, the ego's favorite, which is destruction, or healing and joy and complete release and peace through the Holy Spirit. Awesome. Anything come up for anybody?
Well, it really points up the fact that we're constantly choosing one way or the other.
Yes, it is a constant choice.
It's constant.
And it can be so tempting, because I've lived this many times, to make that choice for the Holy Spirit in one moment and then go on cruise control and think, oh, got this, I'm good. I can do it myself again. And guess what happens? You know, that's the
Here
first
we go.
Step. Yep, that's the first step down the ego staircase, and you won't realize that you're sliding straight down the guardrail all the way to the bottom. Been there.
Been there, so done that.
Yep. It is a moment-to-moment decision that we make.
Yeah.
Oh, shall we read some more? Anybody else have any questions or comments so far? We can keep reading. Okay, this next section is the two emotions. I think it's called that in all the editions. We have said that you have but two emotions, love and fear. One is changeless but continually exchanged, being offered by the eternal to the eternal. In this exchange, it is extended, for it increases as it is given. The other has many forms, for the content of individual illusions differs greatly. Yet they have one thing in common. They are all insane. They are made of sights which are not seen and sounds which are not heard. They make up a private world which cannot be shared. For they are meaningful only to their maker, and so they have no meaning at all. In this world, their maker moves alone, for only he perceives them. In other words, we're going to only perceive our own illusions. So this private world, I mean, think about this on a practical level. You can't share your own internal private world with anybody else. We try to put it into words, you know, we can try to describe it, but your experience is your own experience. It can't be shared. The Course is teaching us that the experience of love and joy and peace can be shared. That can be extended and grow. But the other stuff really can't be. So this idea that there's only two emotions, love or fear, and love is changeless and continually exchanged, being offered by the eternal to the eternal, and so it's extended.
You know
that is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I had an experience tonight. I went out to dinner with my daughters and my granddaughter, and my granddaughter was not a pleasant experience to even be with her tonight. She was just in a terrible, and I kind of thought to myself, am I going to take this personally? And, you know, I just decided, whatever it is, and didn't think much more of it. Later on, I got a phone call from my younger daughter, and she said, you know, I just want to let you know something had happened before we went out to dinner that had Angela upset. And she was, you know, wouldn't talk about it with us. It would be nice if we could share these things as a family, but wouldn't talk about it and just projected this, you could just see the discomfort on her face, you know, and this, it's just so obvious to me that when we are in a loving way and sharing and extending love, you just feel it. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's joyful. And the other is just not.
Mm-hmm.
And leaves you guessing and wondering and feeling awful yourself.
Right. You could say, and I'm trying to think about like the, reading this, that, you know, it's love that's extended, but the other, you know, fear isn't. You know, somebody could say, fear begets fear. And, like, you know, you can grow fear and share it, you know, with one another and have that, you know, fear sort of grow. But we're talking about something that at its roots is an illusion. It's not something that God knows, and so there's no reality to it whatsoever. So only in a dream could it seem like that could be something that could have any real effect. So I just figured I'd throw that in there.
And then I know we have a new person on the call, and I would this is Brian. I would only encourage her, and she's in California, right? The new person?
I'm not sure.
I know she's there, but anyway.
Okay, I didn't catch it.
And I started not too long ago, and I ask questions, and I try to go to the basics, and I just love these calls. But anyway, love and fear, right? Fear, I know. I don't have to ask you what fear is. But a couple of weeks back, I was like, you know, we're really using this word love a lot. And certainly in popular culture, we all have a concept of what love is. But, you know, I just asked the group, you know, what is love? And, it's that wonderful thing that expands, and it's hard to get a full handle on it. But you know what love is intuitively, you know. Fear is, of course, the opposite end, and it's the ego tied up in the midst of it, and we want to get rid of it, et cetera, et cetera. But fear, to me, is just so easily known, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I know you feel love, too.
Mm-hmm.
But fear is scary. I don't like fear.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I hate it.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like
honestly,
sin. Is fear sin?
You know, the definition of a sin in the Course is a mistake. So if we're looking at it from that perspective, you know, fear is it's a false belief. It's a mistaken belief. So, you know, you could say from that aspect or that angle, sure, but it's important to just clarify that the Course is clear that there is no sin, there are only mistakes.
Yeah, it's a roundabout way. It's kind of the same. It's negative. So that's where I go. So I'd only encourage our new person to, you know, speak up if there's a basic concept, foundation.
Yeah, yeah. We do have other folks who listen in, you know, who aren't always on the live calls too. And so if anybody ever has questions, they can always email them or, you know, share in whatever way so we could talk about it on the call. But thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I'm reaching for clear thinking, and I've got pieces of it. I don't have it all in place yet. I'm distracted by the ego. I'm not afraid.
That's okay. it's about asking the Holy Spirit for help and saying, you know, hey, I feel like I'm making baby steps or, you know, getting it a little bit, all we need is that tiny bit of willingness. We don't have to figure it out. We can let those experiences come to us that teach us what love is and teach us how. You know, this is going to probably make your head spin, but it actually, in a few paragraphs, it's somewhere coming up. It called to mind for me, I have Elizabeth Cronkite, I have her different books in her sort of interpretations of A Course, and one of the parts she wrote, and it's not exactly this language in the Course, but she wrote, you love fear and you fear love. And I know that that's going to make our heads spin because it seems like I don't love fear, but this world is actually based on fear, and we retreat. We think there's safety in these separate special identities and, you know, retreating into like, you know, I need to protect my body. I need to not put my body, you know, in any kind of state that could put it in danger. That's actually strengthening fear because we're saying that our reality is limited to this body. It's sort of that head spin, you know, that the Course turns everything upside down, you know, in terms of how we thought we understood things. But how, you know, those words have stuck with me that, you know, you actually love fear and fear love. We're afraid that if we come to truly know what love is with a capital L, you know, what God is, come to know ourselves, that we're going to be called to sacrifice whatever, you know, to we're going to become, I don't know, a big cosmic blob in a big sea of love, you know, that we'll lose something, that we'll lose our separate identity. So looking at how we might be afraid of love is something that's really important, and that's where Nook Sanchez's book that we've talked about many times, The End of Death, has been so helpful to me. I think I posted one of her exercises on the Miracle Share group, the ACIM study group, because it was uncovering, I think, your unconscious fears of God, I'm pretty sure, was the exercise. And, you know, if you think God is love, but you actually realize that you fear God, then wait a second, maybe I do actually fear love. So it can just be really helpful to look at that, and again, look at that with the Holy Spirit. So I just felt moved to share that as you were sharing. So
beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Anybody else have any comments or questions?
I think just reading this material on, you know, the world is just upside down thinking, and the more we read this material, the more we focus on it, it automatically becomes upright, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It turns it around.
Mm-hmm.
That's the importance of really keeping a focus on it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Going back to that moment-to-moment decision. To listen to the Holy Spirit rather than the ego.
Also, I think love truly is light.
Mm-hmm.
Just in that situation tonight with my granddaughter, what's the difference between dark and light?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I really like that. Love is light. Capital L and a capital L. Awesome. Anybody else? I'm noticing that we have 4 minutes left, so we can actually pause our reading there for the evening.
It's so funny when you...
I'm sorry.
Just that when you review it verbally, which is totally beautiful, it sounds so easy. It sounds easy.
And it is easy. Even
no, it's not.
I know. Even though we can experience it as like being extremely difficult, but that is because we're confused about love and fear. It only feels difficult because we're actually confused about love and fear, because there's some sort of tension or, you know, resistance there to turning to the Holy Spirit, to even forgetting, you know, we've talked many times on the call about, like, it's hard to remember sometimes to turn to the Holy Spirit. That's even just a form, it's another ego defense to try to brush the Holy Spirit aside and to keep, you know, on its path. it's marching, you know, it's whatever it is. Path, you know, down a fearful road. So it gets easier, though. I really, really, really want to emphasize that. I think everybody on the call would attest to the fact that it gets easier, because we're building up our trust and we're building up our willingness. And as we turn to the Holy Spirit and have those shifts in perception and start to learn that there actually really is something there, and that we're actually not Corinne or Paula or, you know, fill in your name, that trust builds, and it builds on itself. And so it actually does get easier, even though it might feel really hard in the beginning.
That's wonderful. Thank
so
you.
I promise.
Oh, you okay. I'm going to write that one down. I'm writing it down.
Corinne promises it's going to get easier.
I back you right up, Corinne.
Good, thank you.
It certainly makes all the difference in the world. Brian, you are already there.
You are.
You're there. I'm telling you, it's just that voice in the head that says, oh, no.
Yep.
No, you're not. No. Mm-hmm. No, it's hard.
Yep.
You're there.
Thank you.
I hear it in your voice.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
It's those building blocks, you know.
You got a good vibration.
Oh, thank you. Great call. Love you.
Oh, I couldn't wait. I'm telling you, it went too fast.
Doesn't it?
Oh, my God. I can't even believe it.
Go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to say really quickly that something that always helps me, and it's in the end of death, and Lisa Natoli talks about it all the time too, is that the two thought systems, love and fear, they never meet. They never join in the middle, because one isn't real and the other one is eternal. So they never meet. So whatever love doesn't create doesn't exist.
Mm.
So.
Oh boy, yeah.
I always find that really comforting, especially when I go through my own mind benders of fear, and then I reflect back on it and go, "Gee, that was silly," you know. Yeah.
Once again, we forgot to laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, thank you, DG. That was really helpful. I love that. Love and fear never meet. And that's just a great thing to keep in mind, that if it wasn't created by love, it actually isn't real. And even if it seems like it really, really is, we can trust that all is actually well right now. Even if you just pause for the tiniest of moments and step into that just complete trust in our safety and our security. It's that tiny little instant.
And you know, Corinne, how powerful is that when we do that for, like, my granddaughter? I'm holding that thought for her tonight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm holding that thought for her tonight. That's a beautiful thought. That's a beautiful way to. So, what she was experiencing doesn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And love and peace and joy are her right and inheritance.
Yes. You can be willing, and I'm saying what you're saying, but I'm putting it into my own words. You're willing to see through the Holy Spirit only the truth in her, and only uphold the truth in her.
Absolutely.
That everything is already well. beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Love you all. And I look forward to next week. Remember that this instant is the only instant there is, and all of this is with you in every moment. So
thank you.
Love you all.
Love you all.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Night. Bye.